the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the Gospel of Luke. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Luke, chapters 15 and 16.
Hey, there were two uptown pastors, sophisticated guys. They were asked to speak at a gathering on the other side of the tracks. Well, when they arrived, they walked into a room full of drug addicts and prostitutes and street people. Both men had prepared these very sophisticated lectures. The first pastor, he turned to his colleague and he said, "Man, I'm in trouble. My sermon's not going to work with this crowd." The second pastor, he admitted, "Me too." The initial pastor, he whispered a solution. He says, "I'll tell you what. I'll take the prodigal son out to a far country and you can bring him back home." You know, if you are conscious of your sin, it's impossible not to be moved with emotion by the parable of the prodigal son. No other passage conveys as convincingly to us the hope of God's forgiveness. But the story of the prodigal son was really only one parable in a set of three. In Luke chapter 15, Jesus talks about a lost sheep, a lost coin, and then a lost son. Well, verse 1 tells us, "Then all the tax collectors and the sinners drew near to him to hear him." Isn't that interesting? There was something about Jesus that attracted sinners. I like what author Philip Yancey writes. He says, "Somehow we have created a community of respectability in the church. The down and out who flocked to Jesus when he lived on earth no longer feel welcome. How did Jesus, the only perfect person in history, manage to attract the notoriously imperfect?" Good question. But it's an easy answer. The answer is love. Real, risky, reaching out kind of love. Once there was a kid from Chicago who walked miles in the cold to attend D.L. Moody Sunday School. Someone asked him why he traveled so far when there were other Sunday schools closer by. He replied, "Well, because they love a feller over there." Wow. This is what thieves and prostitutes and gang members and drug dealers all sensed in Jesus. He loved a feller. He loved them. Jesus was able to reach sinners because of his love. You know, this is what today's church planners attempt to do. That they want to reach people, but they do so by being relevant. That's the key word today. The idea is to play the sinner's style of music or to speak in cool language or maybe to identify culturally in some way. But I'm telling you, nothing captures the heart of a man more than knowing he's loved. Nothing is more relevant to sinners than to know that they're loved and that they can be forgiven. Well, the Jewish leaders, they recognized this magnetism. And the Pharisees and the scribes murmured, saying, "This man receives sinners and he eats with them." These legalists, they didn't grasp love. Judaism was more about law than about love. Sadly, their religion had nothing really to say to sinners. To become a part of Judaism, you first had to clean up your act and earn your place and pass the rituals. Sinners were always left on the outside looking in. The notion of a God who went out of his way to love and search for lost sinners, to restore them to his family, this was unheard of among the Jews. And that's why these three parables in this chapter were so revolutionary. So Jesus spoke this parable to them saying, "What man of you having 100 sheep, if he loses one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one which is lost until he finds it?" You know, I heard a shepherd once explain how a sheep gets lost. He nibbles his way into trouble. He moves from one tuft of grass to another until he's through the fence and he's lost his bearings. He wanders off because of his foolishness. Sound familiar? Likewise, there are many people today who strayed from God down the slippery slope. They inched away. The slide was almost imperceptible at the time. They walked away from God in itsy-bitsy steps. You know, like falling asleep on a raft out in the middle of the ocean. When you wake up, you've drifted so far from shore, you can't get back on your own. That's what happens to people. But there's a lifeguard on duty. Hey, call him a shepherd. That's what he's called in this parable. He loves that lone lost sheep to such an extent that he's willing to leave the herd to fetch that one lost sheep. Well, verse 5 tells us, and when he's found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. I love that. The shepherd doesn't even make the wayward sheep walk back on his own. Oh no, he hoists him up on his shoulders and he carries him home. He even throws a party. For when he comes home, he calls together his friends and neighbors, saying to them, "Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost. I say to you that likewise there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 just persons who need no repentance." Wow. You know, the Pharisees, they also had an adage. This was their saying: "There is joy before God when those who provoke him perish from the world." That was the Pharisaical saying. Jesus played off their quotation in order to express God's true heart. There is joy in heaven over one sinner who repents. That's the heart of God. Well, verse 8 tells us, "Or what woman, having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it?" You know, a sheep gets lost through its foolishness. You lose a coin, though, by carelessness. When Jewish women got married, they wore a headdress that consisted of, 10 or more coins. To lose a coin was the equivalent of a woman losing her wedding ring. This was an accident. She was careless. She was negligent. But when she realizes it's gone, man, she's frantic. She starts sweeping the house. She searches everywhere. She turns everything upside down in order to find that which was so valuable to her. Well, and when she found it, she called her friends and neighbors together, saying, "Rejoice with me, for I have found the peace which I lost." And then Jesus says, "Likewise, I say to you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents." Heaven throws a party when one sinner turns from their sin and comes back to God. Heaven throws a party. Horns go off and confetti falls. And balloons fill the air right there in heaven. It's like a New Year's Eve in Times Square. And you know, we should get equally excited when a friend repents. I love it whenever we have an altar call and people respond and everybody claps. It's not something we necessarily coach people to do. It's just spontaneous. They want to throw a party. They want to express their approval and their joy. Heaven is like that. Heaven is like a party. Joy explodes in the heart of God when the lost are found. Verse 11, then he said, "A certain man had two sons." Now take note, there were two sons. We usually focus on one of the boys, the younger one, the prodigal. But we're going to find that the second son also plays a crucial role in this story. Well, the younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me." So he divided to them his livelihood, and not many days after, the younger son gathered all together. Obviously, he's moving out now. He's gathered everything together. He's packed up. He's tired of the old man's rules. You know, he's going to be his own man. He's going to live out on his own. He's going to live his own life for a change. And he journeyed to a far country. Didn't just go down the street. He wanted to get as far away from home as he could. He journeyed to a far country and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. It's really a play on words in the Greek. The word prodigal means wasteful. And so old wasteful wasted his life away. You know, for a season, this young man, he financed the porn shops and the brothels. He ran up a huge bar tab. Boy, he partied hardy. He wasted not only his wealth, but he wasted his mind and his health and his spirit. At Fling's Inn, he was a shell of the man that he'd been before. Verse 14, but when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in that land, and he began to be in want. Isn't this interesting? Isn't this an interesting culmination of circumstances. His wasteful and his wasteful life and a slumping economy hit simultaneously. They reached their peak at the same time. So now he's out of money and he can't get a job. God's orchestrating his circumstances to bring him to rock bottom. Well, then he went and he joined himself to a citizen of that country and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. Finally gets a job, but he'd been better off without one. This was the most humiliating job a Jew could actually accept. Jews were forbidden to eat pork. And here this guy is. He's out in a pigsty, feeding the pigs. This is not what he had in mind when he thought of bringing home the bacon, trust me. And he would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate. And no one gave him anything. Notice that last line. No one gave him anything. Oh, trust me, while this guy had the money, he had friends. You bet he did. But when the funds dried up, so did the fun. Where's the love now? Where's the posse? Suddenly the boy's posse has disappeared. Hey, he's on his own now. No one stood with him. It's been said, only after you hit rock bottom are you willing to look up. Apparently that was the case with the prodigal son. Verse 17. But when he came to himself, I love that. Finally, the boy came to his senses. It hit him. He said, how many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. Man, when he came to his senses, he remembered his father. You know, folks who worked for his dad were treated like kings compared to his own deplorable conditions. Maybe I can go home. And he arose, and he came to his father. You know, it reminds me of Romans chapter 2, verse 4, where Paul there tells us that it's the goodness of God that leads a man to repentance. When this bad boy recalled his dad's kindness, it humbled him, caused him to head home. That's what brings people back. It's when they know God's grace, when they hear of God's grace, when they see God's forgiveness, when they believe that, yes, he'll take them back, then they're willing to turn home. He decided to take his chances with Dad. Dad was a kind man. And of course, here's a good example of baseball in the Bible. I don't know if you ever thought about this, but as I read it, the prodigal son here made a home run. Came all the way home. You know, the Jewish Talmud, it also tells a story of a prodigal who returned home, hoping that his dad would restore him as a son. The father took him back, but not as a son, just as a servant. In the mind of the Pharisee, God could forgive a sinner, but he forever forfeited his right to be a son and to really enjoy the blessings of his father. Full sonship was out of the question for someone who had lived such a prodigal life. Sonship was reserved for the Pharisees, those that had remained true, not the sinners. But this was not the portrait of God that Jesus is about to paint with his brush. Jesus says, but when he was still a great way off, his father saw him, and he had compassion, and he ran, and he fell on his neck, and he kissed him. Years ago, someone wrote a song entitled, The Day God Ran. You know, God is never in a hurry. Why would God ever need to run? Well, here his heart provokes it when he sees this prodigal son humbling himself and coming home. Even when the son was a great way off, his father saw him. It implies that he was looking, that he was waiting, that he was hoping for his son to turn down that corner and start home. It was the longings of love. I imagine this kid, he's walking down the street, his head's down, he's beaten up with shame. His feet are kicking the dirt. In his mind, he's rehearsing his apology over and over. He's just hoping that his father is going to agree to meet him, that maybe he'll take him back as a servant. What a surprise, though, when he sees his dad running down the driveway toward him. Before he even says a word, dad hits him with a bear hug and smothers him with affection. Boy, this is how God responds when one sinner, when you return, when I return, when just one sinner returns and comes back to him. He smothers us with affection. Verse 22, and the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and am no longer worthy to be called your son. He's about to get out the next phrase, if you'll just let me be your servant. But the father doesn't let him finish his sentence. But the father said to his servants, bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet. The family ring was a symbol of sonship. The father isn't just rehiring a servant. No, he's restoring a son. Then he says, and bring the fatted calf here and kill it. And let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. And just like heaven, a party breaks out. Wow. He's restored not just as a servant, but he's restored to full sonship. He gets a place again at the family table. He gets restored as the father's son. What grace, what mercy. Of course, it reminds me of the Sunday school teacher who was quizzing her class. She said, boys and girls, who was sorry when the prodigal son returned home? One little boy raised his hand and he answered, the fatted calf. And I bet he was. That is an excellent answer. But the answer the teacher expected is found in verse 25. Now his older son was in the field, and he came, and he drew near to the house. He heard music and dancing, and so he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come, and because he has received him safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf. But he was angry and would not go in. He pouts out on the porch. Therefore, his father came out and pleaded with him. Now you need to understand, this older son had lived in his father's house, had worked in his father's fields, had eaten at his father's table, but he had never really understood his father's heart. That can happen. In real life, the Pharisees were the elder brothers. They were proud of how they self-righteously served God. Yet in truth, they didn't even know him. If he had understood his father's love, he would have joined the party. Instead, he sat down on the porch and pouted. The Pharisees, like the older brother, they spent so much time trying to earn their father's favor that they never really stopped to appreciate and enjoy his mercy. You see, that happens to religious people. They're busy trying to prove their goodness and bolster their spiritual pride instead of admitting their sin and receiving God's grace. There's a little bit of prodigal son in all of us. We need to admit it and come home. Verse 29, and so he answered and said to his father, lo, these many years I have been serving you. I never transgressed your commandment at any time, and yet you never gave me a young goat that I may make merry with my friends. But as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him. Imagine the Jews. This is the picture of the Pharisees. Jesus is comparing them to the older brother. And I hope you feel the boy's bitterness. It was the same bitterness the Pharisees had toward Jesus and toward his grace to these prostitutes and these down and out. Can you feel this boy's bitterness? Notice he doesn't say, my brother came home. He said, this son of yours came home. My, oh my. His heart is so full of self-righteousness, there's no room for any grace. And the father said to the older brother, son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. It was right that we should make merry and be glad. For your brother was dead. Now he's alive again. And he was lost. Now he's found. One commentator writes, in this chapter, there are four lost items: a sheep, a coin, a prodigal son, and an elder brother. The first three are obviously lost. The fourth is lost and doesn't know it. He's the tragic one. He doesn't have any awareness of his lostness. He never strayed or broke the rules, and yet he missed out on the gift of the Father's extravagant love. You see, you don't have to be an alcoholic or a compulsive gambler or a criminal to be a prodigal son. The far country isn't measured in miles. No, it's measured to the degree to which you separated yourself from the grace and mercy of God. You may have lived your whole life in a Christian family and in the confines of a Bible-believing, Spirit-filled church, but if your heart is cold and you're arrogant and you're self-righteous and you're judgmental and you're trusting in your own efforts, something is desperately wrong. You're an elder brother, my friend. You see, the younger brother was unrighteous, but the older brother was self-righteous. And in the eyes of God, they both are just as despicable. Both separate a person from God. For some of you, it may be time to stop looking down your nose at other sinners and admit that you are one too. Confess and repent, for the Father desires to throw a party for you. Chapter 16 opens with another parable. You know, Shakespeare wrote a comedy entitled The Taming of the Shrew. Well, you could call this parable The Taming of the Shrewd. Jesus also said to his disciples, there was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. Now, a steward was an ancient office manager, in essence. A rich man would hire him and then authorize him to handle his business. And his job was to be faithful to the master. In 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 1 and 2, God calls us his stewards. We've been entrusted with his business. And it's our job also to be faithful to God and to do what he's asked us to do. We need to please the master. Now, for some reason, the steward in this parable, he had failed at his job. And so he called him and said to him, "What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward." Then the steward said within himself, "What shall I do? For my master is taking the stewardship away from me. I can't dig. I'm ashamed to beg." I mean, apparently this steward was afraid of that mean Mexican. You know his name? Manuel Labor. Didn't like that guy. This man was too good to collect carts down in the Walmart parking lot. He didn't want a job like that. Yet he and his family are now about to be put out on the streets. What's he going to do? In verse 4, he concocts a plan. He's shrewd. He says, "I have resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, that they may receive me into their houses." So he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, "How much do you owe my master?" And he said, 100 measures of oil." So he said to him, "Take your bill and sit down quickly and write out 50. Makes a deal. Now, 100 measures of olive oil would equal about 800 gallons. It would take 450 trees to harvest that amount. This would have been the yearly profit on an average olive grove. This is a good deal for this debtor. He can cut his debt in half by acting right now. Well, then he said to another, "And how much do you owe?" And so he said, 100 measures of wheat." And he said to him, "Take your bill and write 80. 100 measures of wheat equaled about 1,000 bushels, which represented the yield on 100 acres. This guy now, he can cut his debt by 20%, but because he's dealing with so much more volume, he may even save more money.
Our greatest calling in life is to be more like Jesus. And the Gospels are the single best place to learn more about how our Savior lived on this earth. Studying the Gospels gives us examples of how to live by the power of God's Spirit. Each day, Pastor Sandy will be teaching through the Gospel of Luke with hopes that we'll grow to be more like Jesus. This has been another edition of Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. Sandy is the senior pastor of Calvary Chapel in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, we're sure that today's message in Luke has blessed and encouraged you in your walk with Jesus Christ. Maybe you'd like to review this message again, or perhaps a family member or friend has come to mind today. Log on to sandyadams.org and click on the radio program option in the main menu. There you'll find today's message. All you need to do is remember today's date and log on to sandyadams.org and then click on the radio program option from the main menu. Or you can give us a call here at the church. Our phone number is 770-736-2828. That's 770-736-2828. Someone is standing by to take your order. Again, just mention today's date and we'll send you the full-length CD. In the next edition, Pastor Sandy will continue to take us through the Gospel of Luke. On behalf of Pastor Sandy and the entire production team, we want to say thank you for tuning in and may God bless you.